You know, past several months we've been looking at miracles and that Jesus performed, and we have been expecting miracles, right? We are expecting miracles. And if you're not expecting a miracle, I hope you turn on your expectations this morning. You know, we started in Matthew chapter 8, and we moved through Matthew chapter 8, and we looked at the miracles in Mark and Luke, and we've been looking at miracles that are only in John. And last week we looked at where Jesus, from 20 miles away, he spoke and fever was broke for the official's son. And this morning we're going to look at another miracle in John. But before we get there, I just have a question for you. My question for you is, do you want to be healed? Whether it's physically, spiritually, or emotionally, do you want to be healed? Do you want to walk away from the anger and the hurt? That seems like a pretty silly question. However, it's the question that Jesus asked in John chapter 5. John chapter 5, verse 1, it says, afterwards, Jesus returned to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish holy days. Inside the city near the sheep gate was the pool of Bethesda, where with five covered porches, crowds of people, blind, lame, or paralyzed, lay on the porches. And then we use the NLT, and the NLT doesn't have verse 4, but the versions that do, they explain what was going on here, and they say something to the effect of the water that was on that this pool under these colonnades would be stirred. Some believe that it was the angel of the Lord would come and stir the water, and the first one in the pool, when the water was stirred, they got their healing. And if not, well, so sorry, come again next time. Verse 5 picks up and it says, one of the men lying there had been sick for 38 years. For 38 years, this guy laid by this pool. And when Jesus saw and knew he had been ill for a long time, he asked him, would you like to get well? I can't, sir, the sick man said, for I have no one to put me into the pool when the water bubbles up or the water stirred. Someone else always gets there ahead of me. And Jesus told him, stand up, pick up your mat, and walk. And instantly the man was healed. He rolled up his sleeping mat and began walking. But this miracle happened on the Sabbath. So the Jewish leaders objected. They said to the man who was cured, you can't work on the Sabbath. The law doesn't allow you to carry that sleeping mat. But he replied, the man who healed me told me, pick up your mat and walk. Who said such a thing as that? And the man didn't know, for Jesus had disappeared into the crowd. But afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and told him, now you are well, so stop sinning or something else even worse will happen to you. And then the man went and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had healed him. Jesus had a knack. He had a knack for asking pointed questions, right? He doesn't beat around the bush. He cuts straight to the chase. He asked this man who's been paralyzed for 38 years, do you want to get well? Do you want to be well? Do you want to be healed? In my mind, this is one of the just dumbest questions ever, right? You see this guy, he's been laying here for 38 years in this situation, and he asks him, do you want to get well? No, I've just been laying here for 38 years for nothing. Right? To me, that's just a duh. I want to be better. But when I think about it, when I think about people that I have encountered, and when I think about things of that nature, I think that wasn't really that. It was an honest question. It's not something Jesus wants to assume that this man wants to get better. See, I've come to realize that some people don't want to get better. They don't want to be healed. Just don't want it. I've had people that tell me they want to be healed, but not so much that they lose their disability. And that's not how God works. And it's not just with physical healings that people respond that way. People respond that way with anger and bitterness and hurt. They don't want to let it go. They don't want to forgive that person. They'll tell you, I just can't forgive that person. Scripture says that if we're not able to forgive, then he's not able to forgive us. And I think sometimes we misinterpret what forgiving means. Forgiving does not mean that I have to go eat Thanksgiving dinner with them. Forgiving doesn't mean that I have to go hang out with them and go to their house and ride in the car with them. Forgiving them means that I'm no longer angry about what they did, that I'm no longer upset, that it doesn't make my blood boil every time I think about them, that I don't hope that they drive their car off a cliff. But we don't want to change. We don't want anything to change. We don't want to put forth any effort to change. Sometimes it's just easier with our crutches. It's our excuse. This guy lived his life in an 8-square-foot area, the same routine, day in and day out. He would get up and we'd beg for money. Sometimes people would give it to him, sometimes they wouldn't. Every day. And once in a while, the water was stirred, and he didn't even move towards or closer to the water because he had no one to help him in. So did he really want to be healed? The dude had laid there for 38 years. Over that 38-year time period, you're telling me that there wasn't a moment that he could have been right up next to the edge of the water. The question was valid. The man's response to Jesus is the response that I hear more than I would like. Jesus asked him, "Do you want to get well?" And he says, "I can't, sir." How many people do you ask, "Do you want to be better? Do you want to be happy?" And they say, "I can't be. I can't get better. I can't forgive them. The doctors have given me this report. And it's, I can't. I can't, sir," the sick man said, verse 7, "for I have no one to put me into the pool when the water bubbles up. Someone else always gets there ahead of me." And the man's response is the same we give: we can't. In 1939, George Danson enrolled as a graduate student at the University of California, Berkeley, studying statistics under Polish-born professor Jerry Newman. As they began, at the beginning of the class session, Dr. Newman chalked two examples of famously unsolved problems on the board. George was late to class that day. He was like some of us this morning to church. And so he missed the disclaimer that these were unsolvable, and he thought the problems were their homework assignment. So he wrote them in his notebook and went to work to try to solve them. And it took a little longer than he anticipated, but George ultimately solved both of them. On a Sunday morning, 6 weeks later, an ecstatic doctor knocked on George's front door to share the news. George actually apologized, thinking that he had turned the assignment in late. But that's not why Dr. Newman was there. He informed him he had solved two of the statistics' unsolvable problems. Well, obviously, they weren't unsolvable because he just solved them. See, George didn't know that the problems were unsolvable. Had he been told that they were unsolvable, he probably wouldn't have even tried. However, he thought this is homework, therefore there must be an answer. Verse 7, he says, "I can't, because I have no one to put me into the pool when the water bubbles up. Someone else always gets there ahead of me." We can't. We can't do it because the doctors told us this. But Luke chapter 1 verse 37 says, "For nothing will be impossible with God." Too often we formulate in our own mind what is and isn't possible. We miss out on miracles because we put it in the impossible category. The man had been told, "You'll never walk again," and he took the words to heart, never thinking about it again. Without a second opinion, without someone telling him it was possible, he just assumed it wasn't. Now here he is, past his prime. The average life expectancy in this time was 42, which he's been laying there for 38 years. The statistic is a little skewed because most of the deaths in this time period happened before the age of 2. But, I mean, if you live past the age of 2, you still only live to be about 43, 44. He's past the prime of his life. He's laid here for 38 years. And nothing's worked because he's been doing the same thing every day. And it hasn't worked. And someone asks him, "Do you want to get well?" And his response is, "I can't. It's impossible." The doctor said it was impossible, but the pool of water is stirred. If I can be first, I'll be healed. But for 38 years, I've tried, and for 38 years, I've failed. And all my friends have left me, and I have no family left. I have no one who believes in me or supports me or helps me. I just can't do it. I can't walk. It's impossible. It's impossible that I'll ever get well. Can't do it, and it's impossible, are two phrases I wish we could just erase from our vocabulary. In fact, as believers, those two phrases shouldn't be there, because with God, the scripture says all things are possible. When I was a kid and I would say, "I can't do something," my dad would always say, "Can't, never could." And I hated that phrase. In fact, I didn't even know what it meant, really. It didn't make sense to me. It never did until I became an adult. And as an adult, I realized that the moment that we say we can't do something is the moment that we don't try anymore. So we never could because we didn't try. In that moment that we quit trying, when we say we can't, when that guy says, "I can't," James, he had already quit trying. By that point, he had already quit trying. He had laid there for 38 years by a pool that if you were the first one in the water, when the water bubbled up, you would get your healing. And for 38 years, he laid there. That guy had to be the slowest guy ever. Right? I mean, I might not be able to walk, but I can crawl pretty fast. I pull people back, pull them off. I'm getting in that water first. If I laid there for 38 years, you better believe I would be I'd be just sitting in the water. Pull me out. I dare you. But he had already quit trying. Because he assumed that nothing would change. It's time that we stop assuming it can't happen or won't happen and start believing it can. In Scripture, it seems to me that the most miracles happen to people who make the fewest assumptions. Joshua did not assume that the sun cannot stand still, but it did. It did. Elisha did not assume that an axe head would float, but it did. Mary did not assume that virgins don't get pregnant, but she did. Peter did not assume that we cannot walk on water, and Jesus did not assume that death was the end of his life. As we grow more and more in faith, you make fewer and fewer assumptions. In Ethiopia, there's been several documented miracles, and one that was told was about this boy who was born with no fingers on one hand. And he was brought to a healing service, and his hand literally just had 5 little stubs. But that didn't deter them from praying for him. And the pastor who was leading the service prayed for the boys and turned around and walked away, and that's when he heard a pop, followed by another and another and another and another. The crowd started cheering as they saw 5 new fingers pop out of the boy's hand. We wonder why we don't see miracles like this. Because we don't pray for stuff like this. We have this false assumption that it won't or can't happen. So we don't even pray that it would. I wish Remy was here this morning. Pray for that thumb. But we won't do that. Because we just assume that it won't happen. He says, I can't, sir. For I have no one to help me into the pool when the water bubbles up. Someone else always gets there ahead of me. This guy had a false assumption that his only hope was when the water was stirred. These pools were located near the sheep gate. It was a two-pool complex. It was as large as a football field. Surrounded by these roof colonnades that provided shade from the sun. It was a natural gathering place in first century Israel. And for 38 years, a handicapped parking permit hung in this dude's window. He had a reserved spot at the pool. Every day, he was there. Day in, day out. He begged for money from bathers. It was rare that they even made eye contact with him, and even rarer that they would give him something. But one thing kept him coming back. One thing kept his hopes alive. Every once in a while, the waters would be stirred. The cause of the stirring was probably the intermittent springs that fed the pool. But a superstition grew and grew around this water and this stirring or bubbling. Some believe the stirring was caused by the angels, and the first one in the water after the water was stirred was the winner, but if not, well, try again. And I just see this happening in my mind, and it's like the water bubbles up, and it's like this bad, tragic comedy situation where hundreds of individuals are creeping and crawling and clawing their way to the water, right? I mean, somebody always beat him out. But the true tragedy of this whole situation was that it wasn't even true. The water bubbled, yeah. But that wasn't what healed people. It was a superstition. They were there under false hope, based on false assumptions. Am I saying that people were healed when they got in the water? Maybe. Maybe it was in their head. Maybe God did heal them despite their superstition. It's easy to be dismissive of such silly superstitions. But we all know someone who wears the same pair of socks on game day because it's their lucky socks, right? Or do the same thing before a game because it's their game ritual. And they're very careful and cautious about making plans on Friday the 13th because. And everyone in the room, whether you think it or not, you have your pet superstitions. Those little things that you believe that you tell your kids, this silly stuff. And while those superstitions may seem to invoke the supernatural, they actually revoke it. Anything less than 100% reliance upon the miraculous power of God and God alone actually short circuits the supernatural. The opposite of belief is just unbelief. It's false belief. The invalid's greatest handicap wasn't physical. His most debilitating handicap was mental. A false assumption, his superstition, that he needed to be the first one into the pool of Bethesda when the water was stirred was the only way that he could be healed. That was his problem. That was his superstition. That was his false assumption. Jesus, though, when Jesus comes on the scene, he doesn't rebuke the superstition. He didn't tell him why what he believed was incorrect or why what he believed was so silly that you've lived by this for 38 years and it's just, have you even thought about it? That's just dumb. Don't you know what happens to water? He didn't do any of those things. He doesn't rebuke him at all. He asks him, do you want to be healed? And he says, I can't. I can't be healed. For I have no one to put me into the pool when the water bubbles up. Someone always gets there ahead of me. But what does Jesus say? In verse 8, Jesus told him, stand up, pick up your mat, and walk. He just says, say less. Don't say anymore. You done told me how you can't, and it's impossible. Pick up your mat and walk. It didn't matter how many false assumptions this guy made in that moment. It didn't matter how long the guy had tried and what wasn't working. Jesus said, stand up, pick up your mat, and walk. I wonder sometimes because this is such a just a stand up. If the guy was like, I don't know. I don't know about this. We make the same mistake this guy made. We keep trying what isn't working. We've tried it all. Nothing's helped. Nothing's worked. Because you haven't tried it all. You've tried the same things over and over again. What we need sometimes is someone to get in our face and ask us, how's that working for you? If you want God to do a new thing in your life, you can't keep doing the same old thing. If you want to experience the miraculous in your life, you can't keep doing the same thing. You need to unlearn every assumption you've ever made except one. God is able. I have to believe that when this guy stood up, his legs look like Forrest Gump dancing. They wobble back and forth. He hasn't walked for 38 years. As he stood to his feet and began to walk, he probably felt some muscle pain that he hadn't experienced. He hasn't walked in 38 years. And at the first little sign of a little bit of muscle pain, he could have said, oh, it didn't work. I have seen people healed and know without a doubt that God healed them. And then them tell me a couple weeks later, I wasn't healed. I've been hurting. And I'm like, what do you mean you've been hurting? Yeah, you're hurting because you haven't used that muscle. And it hurts a little bit. Just keep going. So I got braces this week, and I had braces as a kid. I've been telling her all week some things that she could do to help relieve the pain. Didn't listen to me. I'm like, are you going to listen to the guy who had braces for 5 years? Or are you going to listen to someone who's never had braces? Not listen to me. Last night she said, you're right. What? I did that and it hurt. It doesn't hurt as bad anymore. I told you. I told you. But this guy, he starts running and walking, and he's walking all around town. But that day, he started doing something different. That day, he stopped doing what wasn't working and started relying on God and started doing something that was working. Verse 5 says, one man was there who had been an invalid for 38 years. The fact that this man was called an invalid was not put in Scripture for no purpose or no reason. The fact that there are several nameless people in the Scripture, the prostitute with the alabaster jar, the man born blind, the woman caught in the act of adultery, they're all attached or known for their sin or their sickness. The problem is they let what was wrong with them define who they were. This man had let what he had known what was wrong with him to find who he was. When one of my kids lies to me, I don't call them liars. That's not who they are. I don't let it slide. It's the worst thing that you can do to me in our house. I don't let it slide, but I call it out. But what I'm not going to do is call them a liar, because that's not who they are. And that's not going to define their identity or their destiny. I like labels from Scripture. You're more than conquerors. You're the apple of God's eye. You are sought after. You're a joint heir with Christ. You are a child of God. Do you want to repeat history? We can do it that way, the way that it's always been done, with the assumption that if you can't be healed unless it's done this way, and you'll never change. Or we can change history. And we can do it a way that's never been done. History makers are rule breakers. And no one was better at it than Jesus. He broke the rules. He healed this guy on the Sabbath. Verse 8, he tells this guy, "Stand up, pick up your mat, and walk." And instantly the man was healed. He rolled up his sleeping mat and began walking. But this miracle happened on the Sabbath. Oh, man. So the Jewish leaders objected. The religious people in the crowd rejected. They said to the man who was cured, "You can't work on the Sabbath. The law doesn't allow you to carry that sleeping mat." Jesus healed the man at the pool of Bethesda on the Sabbath. He could have healed him any other day of the week. He could have done it any other time. But he chose the Sabbath. And this made the religious crowd upset. I often wonder if that's why he did it. I mean, I just got this feeling that he was like, "Well, I'll get them stirred up this time." Jesus offended the Pharisees with great intentionality, consistently, and I might add, with some enjoyment. If we follow in Jesus' footsteps, we're going to offend some Pharisees along the way. In fact, there are situations where you need to go out of your way to do so. That's not a license to break the law or permission. But it is permission to break man-made rules that don't honor God. Over the span of many centuries, the Pharisees compiled this comprehensive list of religious do's and don'ts called the mitzvot. Of the 613 codified laws, 248 were positive commands, while 365 were classified as negative commands, and 39 of those prohibited defined that the permissible and impermissible on the Sabbath, right down to the minute detail. Negative mitzvah number 321, for example, set the maximum walking range of 2,000 cubits. Who was measuring that? But it didn't start counting inside the city. You had to be 70.2 thirds cubit outside the city limits. So essentially, a person could not walk in a straight line for more than 0.598 of a mile in any direction outside the city limits. If you walked 6/10 of a law of a mile, you're done. You're over. It's done with you. You might as well just not even come back. And when Jesus told this man to pick up his mat and walk, he didn't tell him to hike to Timbuktu. He told him to pick up his mat and walk. And I'm sure this guy was walking, running, jumping, skipping, hopping all over Jerusalem. That wasn't against the rules. That wasn't the problem. The problem was that he was carrying his mat. an activity that was strictly forbidden by Pharisaical law. Of course, there's nothing in Scripture to sustain this or to even make this even look real. And Jesus knew it since he wrote the law. The prohibition against carrying a mat was not a divinely ordained law. It was nothing more than a man-made rule, a silly rule, it thought that, especially for someone who had just been healed after 38 years of laying there on that mat. If we want to see miracles, we need to stop allowing man-made rules and assumptions to restrict us. And God, and restricting God from doing what he can do. Did you know that kids on average ask 125 probing questions a day? Adults ask 6 probing questions a day. Somewhere between kid and adult, we start assuming 119 things a day. We stop asking questions and start making assumptions. And that's the day that imagination dies. It's also the day that miracles stop. Because we have all the answers. And the logical answer is it can't happen. I'll never walk again. I've been this way for 38 years. 1 Corinthians 8:2 says, anyone who claims to know all the answers doesn't really know very much. Let me say it again. Anyone who claims to know all the answers doesn't really know very much. We're too quick to explain what we don't really understand. And God is at the top of that list. We try to explain it all away. You can know God, but to think that you know everything there is to know about him is the epitome of pride. The more you know about God, the more you know how much you don't know about God. I'm okay with reverting to childhood if it means that I see more miracles. If it means that I see more miracles because I'm willing to ask more questions, I'll ask more. But we have to make a choice. We have to make a choice today. The question I asked you at the very beginning of the service is the same question that I'm asking you right now. Do you want to be healed? Do you want to get better? Do you want things to change in your life? You want to leave here the way that you came in? Are you ready to stop assuming you know what God is capable of doing and just let him do what he can do? Because my scripture, my Bible says that he can do all things. But it's up to you. You have to make the choice. There is no doubt in my mind that there were people that Jesus went to and asked, do they want to be healed, that we don't read about, that said no, and we don't read about them. You know how I know that there are people like that? Because I've met people like that. I remember there was a guy and he was sick and I asked him, can I pray with you? And he said no. I prayed for him anyways. But I told him as he's walking away from me, you won't get what I got. It's not contagious. So I know by my experience that people did the same thing to Jesus. No, I don't want to be healed. So I ask you this morning, do you want to be healed? Whether it's physical, whether it's emotional, whether it's mental, whether it's spiritual, do you want to be healed this morning? Ask everyone that would to stand to your feet. Lord, I just thank you today. I thank you for miracles first. I thank you for healing. I thank you for healing me, God. I thank you for healing me physically. I thank you for healing me emotionally and spiritually, God. I thank you for healing, helping me to get rid of my anger and bitterness. Lord, I just pray that this morning that you begin to do that in others. Lord, I pray this morning that you just begin to heal and you begin to deliver people in this house. Lord, there are people in this room, there's no doubt in my mind, that are battling anger and hurt. Lord, I pray that today that they get rid of it, that they give it to you. Lord, I know that there are people in this room that are battling sickness, and Lord, I pray that today that they receive their miracle. Help us to want to get well. If you're here and you want to get well, that you want something to change in your life, I encourage you to move. I invite you to come to this altar. I want to pray with you. I want to believe with you. Do you want to be well? Do you want to be changed? Do you want to be different? What are you afraid of this morning? Don't miss it. Don't miss it. Lord, I just thank you right now. Thank you for the ones that responded. And Lord, I know that there are more that need to be here. And today I pray that you help them to make that decision in their mind, God. Lord, I pray that you move among these people. If you feel led to come and pray for the ones that are here, feel free to do so. If you feel led to come and pray around this altar, feel free to do so.